This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. What if the Revolutionary War happened just because all of the colonists were a bunch of rowdy drunks ginning one another up at the various taverns liberally sprinkled around New England? I suppose that's taking it too far, but those early colonists did drink a lot. The Green Mountain Boys hatched their plans for liberty and freedom over tankards at the Catamount Tavern in Bennington, and the Continental Army gave a ration of spruce beer to all of its soldiers on a daily basis. Food and drink writer Corinne Hirsch was shocked to discover how much drinking was going on in those early days, and she wrote about it in her new book, Forgotten Drinks of Colonial New England. She joins us now to discuss those drinks. Corinne, welcome to Vermont Edition.
Hi, Jane. Thanks for having me.
How much were people imbibing in early New England?
Well, I've seen various figures, but the one that I used in the book is roughly, I think, all colonists over the age of 15. So most adults, by the time the Revolutionary War began, were drinking 4 to 5 gallons of pure alcohol per year, so quite a bit. And it extended from, and children drank a low-alcohol form of cider, and a lot of the people a lot of the founding fathers were starting the day with cider or beer in their glasses. So
cider for breakfast.
Cider for breakfast. John Adams had a tankard of cider for breakfast every day, and students at Harvard were given beer in the morning as part of their early day rota. So.
Yeah, that did not happen when I was an undergrad there. Yeah. We were not given beer for breakfast.
Well, there was a brewery at Harvard, so I don't know when they phased that out, but yeah.
And was everybody drinking? I mean, you mentioned people over the age of 15 had 4 to 5 gallons of hard alcohol a year, but were children drinking that low-alcohol cider all through their childhood, and were women drinking as well?
Women were drinking, I assume, more at home. There's not a lot of documentation about that, but cider was a drink that was drank at home more commonly than in taverns, and women were not really allowed in colonial-era taverns. If they were, they had a separate room where they would drink tea. But children were drinking a cider can. I can't say how prevalent that was, but it's definitely there's definitely accounts of kids drinking the second pressing of the pomace, which made a hard cider of 1 to 2% alcohol called ciderkin. And it was seen as safer than water in some cases. It was just a cultural more that had carried over from England, where people drank fermented beverages throughout the day, especially in places where water wasn't seen as safe.
So. Yeah, talk more about that. What was so wrong with the water?
I think that sanitary practices were not really in full effect in England until the 1800s, and as early as the 1300s, you see laws appearing on the books trying to dictate where people could dump their waste, and water was making people sick, and it was clear that fermented beverages were not, and people had a habit of drinking beer throughout the day, especially in urban areas. I think cider, again, was more of a rural drink, and a lot of the ships that came over in the 1600s had beer rations on board. The Mayflower famously had beer on board, and the disappearance of the beer as they neared the coast here was kind of a matter of tension between the crew and the passengers on board.
You know, we've talked a little bit about beer and cider, but it wasn't all just beer and cider. There are some really unique drinks and really uniquely named drinks that mm-hmm. you write about in your book, Forgotten Drinks of Colonial New England. Can you name a few of them and what
sure.
the heck was in them?
Sure. The name that most people seem startled by is Rattle Skull, which has sort of a dastardly name for a very mm-hmm. delicious drink, a very simple drink. It's a dark beer, generally with rum or brandy dropped into it, and maybe some citrus added to it. It's really smooth and really delicious. And I think a lot of people have heard of grog, which is a mix of rum and water and citrus and some sugar and some sweetener. And a lot of colonial drinks take on this formula of mixing a hard spirit with either beer or cider or water with citrus for a little bit of a zing and some sweetener. Mimbo is another drink. It's sugar essentially in rum and water. And so you have these variations of those ingredients, but some of the drinks are surprisingly delicious. And the most common one back then, they weren't called cocktails back then. I guess they're proto cocktails. But Flip was sort of the Cosmo of its day, and you could find it in most taverns. And it was a mix of beer and rum, generally eggs, sometimes some cream and spices. And it was served warm, and it was often heated up with a poker from the fire. And sometimes when I talk and I tell people about this drink, they say, ew, that sounds disgusting. But Flip is actually really delicious. And if you hand someone a Flip, I haven't seen someone dislike it yet. It's a really delicious drink.
So you're making some of these. Are you heating your Flips up with a poker from the fire?
I don't have a fire at home, but I have done it in other venues. And it, when you stick the poker into the drink, it kind of it gives off this steam, which smells delicious. And then the drink gains this charred flavor from it. It's really, really something unique.
Were there any drinks that you tried in your research that you thought, oh, my God, thank God we don't drink that anymore?
No, actually, I like most of them. Although one drink that I didn't try to make, which I is in the book and I have it in there, is Whistlebelly Vengeance, which was a way that some folks dealt with beer that was going sour, which happened often because they didn't always have access to hops and were using some unique things to preserve their beer, and it wasn't being preserved for long periods of time. So to in the Yankee tradition, to save something and not throw it away, they'd heat up the sour beer and drop in bits of bread, and this is Whistlebelly Vengeance, and it just does not sound like a very palatable drink.
I don't know, though. The name might do it for me. I might have to try Whistlebelly Vengeance just to say I've had it.
Yeah. Okay. Well, soggy bread and sour beer. You could try it.
All right. Well, maybe not. You know, some of the drinks that you write about are sort of making a comeback, either in alcoholic or non-alcoholic forms. I'm thinking especially of Switchel, which you can buy in a lot of stores mm-hmm. around here now.
Yeah.
Are you seeing that tying back, hearkening back to the old days in our drinks of today?
It seems that way. I think that drinks in general are tacking back towards simplicity, whereas they got, especially craft cocktails, got quite complex. And they still are complex in many venues, but I think that those behind the bar are realizing the beauty and simplicity. And also, well, specifically with hard cider, which disappeared from our drinking landscape for so long, and that was really the most imbibed drink back in colonial times from the late 1600s up through the early 1800s, and that's certainly having a resurgence right now. I think it's people key into how primed this landscape is for growing apples, and that it's a way to sort of add value to apples and extend the harvest. You see hard cider coming more into play. But Switchel, yeah, I think there are two companies in Vermont making Switchel right now, and I'm not sure why both of them revived it, but I'm glad that they did. It's a drink that was sipped during haying, often to refresh farmers, and its key ingredient is vinegar, which gives it some tang. And vinegar was used in lieu of citrus sometimes when people couldn't get lemons or limes or oranges, they would use cider vinegar too. So it gives zing to this drink. It's a very refreshing drink, and there's ginger in there, often maple syrup and water.
Yeah,
and sometimes rum.
Yes. Yeah, don't forget the rum if we're talking about alcoholic drinks here. That's Corinne Hirsch. Her new book is called Forgotten Drinks of Colonial New England, and she was kind enough to give us a couple of recipes so you can try some out yourself. We have them on the Vermont Edition page at vpr.net. Corinne, thank you so much for talking with us.
Well, thank you, Jane.